From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, November 22, 2016. And on this day, a federal court has dismissed Maine Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves' appeal for a district court to reconsider his civil lawsuit against Governor Paul LePage. State wildlife officials have authorized a special deer hunt in Eastport, where the herd has gotten so big, deer are often spotted in parking lots and backyards. And we check back in with an injured Lewiston veteran who opted to have both of her legs removed to see how things are going. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st, MaineGardens.org, and USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves has lost his appeal for a district court to reconsider his civil lawsuit against Governor Paul LePage. In a split decision, the United States Court of Appeals of the First Circuit has dismissed Eaves' appeal. Two members of the three-judge panel ruled that LePage is protected by the immunity clause designed to discourage civil lawsuits against elected officials. The decision reaffirms a May ruling by U.S. District Judge George Single to dismiss Eaves' lawsuit. Today's 34-page ruling includes a dissent by Rogerier Thompson. Thompson argued that the immunity defense, quote, hardly gives an official carte blanche to trash a citizen's constitutional rights, close quote, because it's been used in previous rulings. Eaves' lawsuit alleged that LePage illegally retaliated against Eaves when he threatened to withhold state funding from his future employer, Goodwill Hinckley. The Fairfield nonprofit later rescinded its offer to make Eaves its next president. Eaves also sought an injunction against LePage to prevent him from threatening the nonprofit again and an order to seek civil rights training. The majority ruled that Eaves did not demonstrate that any injury he has suffered is, quote, irreparable. And the former chief of the Passamaquoddy tribe at Pleasant Point says he was recalled in a special election earlier this month because he was cracking down on a widespread opioid problem on the reservation. Fred Moore says that crackdown included workplace drug testing for operators of mechanical equipment.
That resulted in a few resignations of employees and efforts by program managers and some of their employees to evade drug testing. They then teamed up with the already adverse factions within the tribal council and attempted to take over the tribal government.
Moore had served a tumultuous term as chief since 2014. He was recalled by a vote of 280 to 54. Vice Chief Vera Francis, with whom Moore has publicly sparred and who was suspended from her duties last year, has said she will serve out the nearly 2 years remaining on Moore's term. Francis did not return a telephone call from Maine Public Radio seeking comment for this story, but according to a published report in the Quoddy Times, the recall petition alleged that Moore had violated the tribe's constitution and personnel policies by using his authority for personal gain. It also alleged that he misused tribal funds. Moore has denied the allegations. He says he survived six recall petitions until now.
I think that the more I expose the opioid epidemic in the community, then the more likely it is that, at least for the time being, there will be a certain amount of adversity directed towards me. Yeah.
Moore says he's now directing his focus to creating a culturally based treatment program for opioid addiction off the reservation. Coming up, we check back in with an injured Army veteran from Lewiston who chose to have both of her legs amputated to see how she's doing. A little more than a year ago, Maine wildlife biologists were talking about possible statewide conservation measures that might be necessary to protect the white-tailed deer herd. All of that talk struck residents of Eastport as a little odd, because on their three-square-mile island, deer were regularly wandering into parking lots and backyards and across the road. Now, state officials have authorized a special deer hunt aimed at bringing the island's deer population down to a more manageable level. A.J. Higgins has more.
Maine's easternmost city is known for having some of the highest tides in the United States. But lately, Eastport has acquired a reputation for hosting another natural phenomenon.
And they're everywhere. Every street you go on, it's ridiculous. Yeah, there's more deer here and almost than there is people.
A waitress at the Wacko Diner, Sandra Seeley, has been calling Eastport home for 55 years. She says she's never seen anything like the explosion in the deer population this year.
I went to go out to the road the other night, and there was a car coming towards me. We literally, both cars had to stop, and they didn't stop. They just kept jumping out of the field, the woods going across the road, and there was 14 of them.
There may be some relief in sight for Eastport's 1,300 residents. The Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Advisory Council has authorized a limited does-only hunt for 2 weeks next month, with the hope of culling 30 animals from a herd that could be as large as more than 100. Some members of the council have attributed the explosion to a 2005 decision by the department to redraw the boundaries of Maine's wildlife management districts. Eastport went to a bucks-only hunt as the result of that process, and IFNW Commissioner Chandler Woodcock says conditions on the island now warrant an additional harvesting season.
What we're looking to do is cut down on that 20 to 30 deer per square mile down to a reasonable percentage, and we normally are in the 10 range per square mile. So we're going to see what happens. They're going to have 30 licenses, which they're going to oversee. And I think there are 22 of them going to residents and 8 non-residents in a lottery down there. Each license will authorize one antlerless deer. So they really have the controls of the specific of the program.
I think that's a good idea to start with that.
Pearl McKnight is another Eastport resident who wants the deer culled. She says a small caravan of deer makes its way through her backyard on an almost nightly basis that begins with the appearance of a single doe and her two fawns.
Slowly but surely, the whole of them will follow each other, because they do follow each other. Yeah, yeah. So the only problem being is they're so used to us, they don't even move when they're in the middle of the road. They walk right up the middle of the road. They don't care. And they don't move very good. You have to completely stop and wait for them to get by or toot your horn, and they'll go a little bit faster.
There's nothing natural about this. It's not natural for people to have deer trying to come stick their head into windows.
Eastport City Manager Elaine Abbott says the animal's complete absence of fear and familiarity with humans has resulted in some harrowing encounters on the road. Abbott said last year Eastport had 20 motor vehicle accidents involving deer that racked up about $40,000 in property damage. She says reducing the herd by about 30 animals this year is a good first step. The special season authorized by the town and the state will allow only archers who will confine their hunt to the hundreds of wooded acres in the community.
We love our deer. We love the deer. We just don't love this many of them.
Commissioner Woodcock said the advisory council approved the special hunt for 1 year only. The panel will review the Eastport deer population next year to determine whether another special season is needed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And the USS Zumwalt, built at Bath Iron Works and the most expensive destroyer ever built for the Navy, broke down in the Panama Canal and had to be towed. Fred Bever reports.
In a statement, the Navy says the first-of-its-kind ship is remaining in Panama to address engineering issues. The ship is making its way from Maine to its eventual home port in San Diego. The guided missile destroyer staged successful sea trials off Maine earlier this year, but once in Norfolk, Virginia, the Navy found a seawater leak, and union sources say BIW sent staff there to help repair the problem. BIW officials did not return requests for comments. That problem in September did not disable the ship, the Navy said, but according to USNI News, the recent canal breakdown did, and it had to be towed to a port in Panama. It suffered minor exterior damage passing through a lock as well. The publication says the breakdown may involve a heat exchange system and a seawater leak. The Zumwalt is the first of three ships in the DDG 1000 class, with a combined price tag estimated at $22 billion. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And a year and a half ago, we told you about Lewiston Army veteran Christy Gardner, just days before she was to get one of her legs amputated below the knee. Gardner was injured in 2006 in the line of duty. Ever since, she had been in constant pain and was often relegated to a wheelchair. When we first met Gardner, she explained that she had made the decision to voluntarily amputate both legs after seeing how much disabled veterans were able to do with prosthetic legs.
When I see them doing stairs or hills or walking around like it's no big deal, I want to be able to do that.
Patty White recently met up with Gardner to see what's happened to her since.
We meet on a Sunday morning in the parking lot of Cape Elizabeth Middle School. This is the home of the Turkey Trot 5K race.
This is my first 5K since getting the running blades. This will be my first attempt at running. And stupidly, I've only been doing running training for about 5 days.
Christy Gardner just got her running legs about a week ago. The hardest part, she says, has been to trust them. They're tough to balance on because instead of ending in a flat shoe, each leg ends in a curved blade.
How are you feeling about the race?
Nervous, naturally. The fact that it's my first race, the fact that I've barely trained, the fact that it's raining doesn't help.
The steady rain and strong wind isn't the most welcoming weather for Gardner's first race, but she has her brother Jake, who will run alongside her.
She's been training about 5 days longer for running than I have.
Jake is Gardner's pit crew. He stuffs a backpack with a spare set of legs, along with a couple of wrenches, in case her running blades need adjusting.
I'm here to support her because it's nice to see that everything that was originally taken away, and now she's getting back and getting life back together and getting to do fun things and get out and be adventurous again. And anything I can do to help is what I'm going to do.
Gardner has two goals for this 5K race. First, to finish. Second, to cross the line in under an hour. She joins the pack of soggy runners waiting for the signal to start.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
The beginning is the most nerve-wracking part of the race. It's crowded. As runners jockey for position, they stop and swerve. It's hard for Gardner to react in time. But within a few minutes, the pack thins out and Gardner settles into a steady pace, her golden retriever service dog Moxie panting alongside her.
Good job, Mox.
It's been a year and a half since Gardner started the process of having each leg amputated one at a time. Her decision to voluntarily remove them was not met with universal support. She had to travel to a surgeon in California for the procedures after she couldn't find doctors within Veterans Affairs willing to do the surgery. Her mom, Norma Heidrich Kroll, was devastated at the prospect of her daughter losing her legs.
In the beginning, I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Those were her legs. You know, this was my baby.
Amputations can cause nerve pain and excess bone growth. Heidrich Kroll worried her daughter was making a gamble that wouldn't leave her any better off. But Gardner hasn't experienced any of those complications. Her mom says she now realizes that amputation was the best decision her daughter ever made.
She was in probably her lowest mental state at that time. A lot of pain, you know, stuff that we can't even imagine. And to just be told, you know, your life is over the way it is, and, oh, just be happy, sit in a wheelchair and, you know, deal with it. And that wasn't her. And I really worried about her, whether we were going to have her, because her mental state was bad.
But since her daughter has been fitted with prosthetic legs, Heidrich Kroll says she's come alive again.
Oh, my God, I can't breathe. My legs are holding up decent. Getting there.
Come on, Stumpy.
Working on it.
Gardner is nearing the end of the race. As she approaches the finish line, the crowd roars.
We have got our U.S. Army veterans.
She crosses the line in 41 minutes, well within her goal of finishing in under an hour.
Fantastic effort from Christina.
Gardner was also joined by friends in the race, including fellow combat veteran Crystal Audette. Audette says dealing with the aftermath of combat can be tough, but Gardner has shown that a bad situation can be turned into a positive one.
I mean, she has every right to sit in her house and drink herself to death because
everything that happened to her, and she chooses not to.
Gardner says people often ask if she feels handicapped after amputating her legs, but she says she feels better.
I ran a 5K. I ran the whole thing. Like, this was clearly in my best interest. So it's worked out for the better.
And Gardner isn't going to stop at running. Next spring, she's due to get a pair of cycling legs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And Mainers are driving into one of the busiest and most dangerous travel weekends of the year. AAA of Northern New England estimates that more than 2 million New Englanders will be traveling for the Thanksgiving holiday. It's expected to be the busiest nationally since before the recession. Spokesman Pat Moody says there are a couple of big reasons for that.
You know, people have a little bit more consumer confidence right now. Gas prices are lower than they were this time last year. Americans have saved more than $28 billion so far this year at the pump compared to the same period last year. So there's a little bit more money to get out there and travel.
The busy weekend also means danger. Maine State Police say there have been at least 4 deaths in each of the past 4 Thanksgiving weekends. They plan to have additional troopers on patrol and their plane in the air looking for aggressive, impaired, and texting drivers. Troopers will also be looking for people who aren't using seatbelts after several fatal crashes this month in which occupants were not buckled up. They're cautioning people to be prepared for unexpected weather. And if you plan to hit the road for the holiday, meteorologist Paul Cousins tells you what kind of weather is expected in the coming days.
The overcast will maintain its slow retreat to the north overnight, yet snow showers will persist along the international border. The gusty winds will abate, 20 statewide by dawn. Tomorrow, winds more reasonable, temperatures more seasonable. There will be considerable cloudiness over northern and mountainous portions of Maine, but the flurries will dry up. Skies partly sunny down east, nearly full sunshine for the remainder of the state. Mid-30s north to upper 40s south. On Thanksgiving, Maine begins a descent into a lengthy tenure of gray, raw weather. Northern Maine will hold out one more day with abundant sun. Central down east, thickening clouds. Across southern and western Maine, some light snow breaking out during the afternoon, but nothing of great consequence. Perhaps rain along the coast, 30s to near 40 statewide. Friday, gray and quiet. Snow showers will expand over all but the eastern third of Maine, blending with rain within 25 miles of the ocean. 30s north to low 40s along the entire coast. The weekend will become stormy, a challenge for returning holiday travelers. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina. And to Steve Missler, Mal Leary, A.J. Higgins, Patty White, Fred Bever, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caritti. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.